Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
Montreal, good day. Beryl Wiseman here, The Last Angry Man, the new 940 Montreal. With me in studio is Rick McConomy, who is our Mr. Everything. I'll go through this only one more time, Rick.
Go ahead, go ahead.
With you because it's taking up too much time. Former Bâtonnier of the Bar, former president of Centre Canada, and a Grand Marshal of St. Patrick's Day Parade. Rick's a lawyer, specialized in mediation, and couldn't have a better lucky charm than a former Grand Marshal of the Parade. Right, Rick?
There we go. Great to be here. Second time around. Big show ahead. Looking forward to it.
We've got a full show today. Last week, as you know, this show's about advocacy. It's about making you, the public, understand you don't have to get mad. You can get even. I'm president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal, which is one of Canada's largest social action alliances. You've got a problem with corporations, institutions, or government, you call us, we can help you. We can empower you. Last week, we had on Julius Gray, who discussed civil liberties. We discussed the infringement of our civil liberties and how you can deal with that. We had Duff Conacher of Democracy Watch, probably the premier government ethics organization in the country. You can have a voice on those broad issues. Today we've got a full agenda on the issues on the ground. We're going to have Judge Andre Ruffo with us discussing the dysfunctionality of the youth protection system. We're going to have Tony Cochand, executive director of Don LaRue. We're going to have Helen Waverock, who's executive director, directrice générale, actually, of the Quebec Network Against Seniors Abuse. We're going to discuss some of the idiocies of our immigration system. And we're going to have the Reverend Daryl Gray talk about the perils of public advocacy and speaking truth to power. But we're going to lead off with some politics about this election, because the problems that we all have stem from the top down. It stems from an arrogance of attitude on the part of who rules and how much they involve themselves in our lives. And, you know, it's perhaps out of the purview of an advocacy show to talk about politics, but in this respect, it falls right into it. Because, as I said last week, this show's about the thousand little pictures, the thousand heroes, the thousands of heroes of you out there who do your jobs, who pay your taxes, who make the society work. And every now and then, there's a little picture that happens, an explosion, that shows the true face of government and the true face of what's bugging all of us. And to me, that explosion happened this week. Edward Murrow, the great CBS newsman who invented advocacy journalism, investigative journalism, modern journalism, used to say to his producer, "We're not taking on Senator Joseph McCarthy, the right-wing ideologue, until I get a little picture, until I get a little story." And that little story in 1954 and 1953 became the case of Lieutenant Milo Radulovich, young man in the Air Force, a lieutenant who was cashiered out honorably because he had maintained relations with his sister and his father, who maintained subscriptions to a communist newspaper called the Daily Worker. For Murrow, that was the little picture. That was the thread that was going to unwind McCarthy, and indeed he did. And in one of his last broadcasts on McCarthy, Murrow said, "If we don't act as a people against these thousand little infringements, these thousand little petty conceits, then the fault, dear Brutus, lies not in the stars, but in ourselves." We saw an example of that this week, and I want to run through it with you before we get to our special guest in studio with us on this election, General Louis McKenzie, and Louise O'Sullivan, who is the Tory candidate in West Montgomerie. And we'll get to that right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back with you. As we said, we have a full show today. We want to hear from you, and you can start lining up the calls and calling in on youth protection, on the problem of seniors' abuse, on the perils of advocacy. But as I said in the previous segment, this is a top-down society, and we work from signals from the top. But every now and then, something happens and the thread unwinds, and the top-down starts to unwind, and we see the true face of the state that is controlling every move we make. And to me, something happened this week. And Rick and I were talking about it before, and we're going to get to our special guest, General Lou McKenzie, and Tory candidate Louise O'Sullivan, West Montgomerie, in one moment. Last Tuesday, after the French debate, after the French language leaders debate, on CTV, and I hope some of you, if not many of you, caught this, Mike Duffy had his usual lineup of talking heads from the different parties. And there were the NDP candidate, the Tory candidate, the NDP representative, the Tory representative, and the Liberal representative, who was named John Duffy. And they had 2 minutes of banter, went to commercial, and after commercial, Mike Duffy asked John Duffy, the liberal strategist, John, what kind of perverse mentality thought up these attack ads, but particularly the military attack ad that suggested that a political leader in Canada is an Augusto Pinochet? John Duffy didn't want to take the question. He said, we have plenty more to talk about. We don't have to talk about that. And Mike Duffy exploded. And he exploded in the way we all want to explode. He said, we are going to talk about it. And we're going to talk about it because it goes to the integrity of your government, the integrity of your leader, the integrity of the people around you, and because during the commercial you tried to intimidate me not to ask you. And I will not be intimidated. Journalism will not be intimidated. This network will not be intimidated. And this country will not be intimidated. And that was the little picture, my friends. That was the thread that demasks this culture of entitlement we've been talking about in the government in Ottawa. La La Land on the Rideau.
And in the history of Canada, this will go down as Duffy on Duffy.
Duffy on Duffy. And Rick, CTV played it the next day for all it was worth.
Fabulous.
Can you remember anything like this in the past 30 years?
I can remember those kind of things happening, but I can't remember somebody going on air and making it a public issue. And I think that's a big change, and I think it's a change that may be permanent from this election.
And
people will talk back.
They will talk back, and we want you, Montreal, to talk back, so call in. But on this issue, we have General Lou McKenzie. Lou, where are you right now, Muskoka?
Yeah, I'm up in Bracebridge, a couple hours north of the city. Came up from the big smoke last night. I live up here. I'm not one of those visitors.
Up in God's country.
Yeah, well, it's my wife's hometown, so I have to be kind.
General McKenzie, as all of you know, was head of the UN operations in the Balkans, one of Canada's most decorated military men, a man who doesn't mince words. Also in studio with us, Westmount Vomitory candidate Louise O'Sullivan. Louise, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Louise has been very involved in politics at three different levels, and she was recently in the executive committee of the City of Montreal, and we're going to ask her where she gets the energy for these races. But Louis, I want to turn to you first. How did you and your friends and the people around you react to this ad, even though it was pulled?
Well, yeah, and I understand it was pulled a lot later in Quebec. It actually showed a number of times.
It's still showing, yes.
Not as a news report, but as an actual commercial. I was watching television the night that it came out, and I was called by a friend who said, better get onto your computer and call this thing up. And I looked at it, it took my breath away, because I didn't really think that anybody could be that stupid. I mean, you don't use soldiers as a wedge issue. The more I thought about it, though, the more I thought it was great for the soldiers' morale, because what happened the following day was what I anticipated. It must be around 99.9% of all the commentary, all the talk shows, all the editorials said just that. What a stupid thing to do.
Massive blowback.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the soldiers, they really felt good about it. What bothered me, and I know this is going to sound terribly partisan, it's not meant to be, but the way it was handled...
It's okay. We make no claim to objectivity here.
Well, the way it was handled at the top, I mean, if the PM had said, look, I saw this thing, I didn't want it to go out, somehow it got out, somebody made a stupid mistake, and I'm really sorry this has happened, you and I wouldn't be discussing this. That story would have gone away. So it's the way the leadership actually handled the crisis. You know, if you're in your hole, the first thing to do is, you know, stop digging. But they're still digging on it, because 2 days ago, the Prime Minister actually involved the CDS, the Chief of Defense Staff, which is very unfair because he's non-political by law, and he indicated, well, I was just trying to explain that the CDS doesn't want to penny-pack the troops around the country, he wants to concentrate them, which is not an interpretation of what the CDS is doing at all, but it fit the explanation to try and make excuses for the ad.
The CDS, General Rick Hillier, you have written that we now have a Chief of Staff who calls a spade rather than a pitchfork and a terrorist, a scumbag rather than a disenfranchised youth. He must have reacted really well to Martin's entreaties.
Yeah, and you know, I have to give some kudos here, because it showed a certain amount of cojones for the PM and or the Minister of National Defense to appoint an outspoken individual like Rick Hillier, a good soldier, into that position, because they must have known what was coming, so they must have seen some political advantage to that. I've said to Rick a couple of times, you know, when I was saying things like you're saying, when I was saying them 10 years ago, the only people that were giving me a hard time were the CDS and the Minister of National Defense, and now the CDS and the Minister, much to Graham's credit, have been making some fairly outspoken comments and trying to educate the Canadian people away from this myth of Canada as a peacekeeping nation.
Well, Lou, a part of that has to be due to you, and I want to tell Montrealers, and Montrealers, if you are viscerally angry at this, we want to hear from you, because the image of Canada as this soft-spoken little namby-pamby country is just so wrong. We have such a bold record, and Lou McKenzie, I can't get out of my mind the words you used on a recent show you were on, which said that, why are we counting every single person, every single casualty? Where would we have been a D-Day if we only had bean counters? And we'll be right back with everybody to continue this conversation.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. We're talking with General Lou McKenzie. We want to know from you, are you offended by these liberal attack ads? Are they taking your opinion for granted? Are they over the top? Lou, we just finished talking about, we just finished touching on the issue that you raised in a recent interview, that Canadians have started to be so scared of any military mission, of any sense of responsibility in carrying our fair share of the burden in spreading democratic development, that every time there's an incident, a wounding, sadly, as we saw today, a death of a soldier, Canada seems to freeze up. And you said on a recent interview, if we had bean counters 50 years ago, like we do today, we'd never participate in Normandy because there were going to be casualties. People are worried that there were 30,000 Iraqis killed in collateral damage, civilian deaths, while Saddam Hussein was killing 80 to 100,000 people a year. What's happened to Canadian sense of consequence?
I think the continuing sort of perpetuation of a myth by successive governments, Canada as a peacekeeping nation, which was an important sideline for us, don't get me wrong, during the Cold War, but when we had less than 1,000 peacekeepers in the 50s, 60s, and 70s serving overseas, we had 10,000 troops, Air Force and Army primarily in Europe, frequently during that period armed with U.S.-supplied and controlled until the 11th hour nuclear weapons on the tips of bombs on the F-104s and our land-to-surface-to-surface missiles. But that didn't generate much publicity. It was the touchy-feely stuff, and God knows I was part of a number of those missions, doing good work in Cyprus and Gaza and places like that. And that was done primarily, if you're a bit jaded like I am, because it's a cheap option. By that I mean you don't need all the very expensive bits and pieces to do conventional peacekeeping, which, by the way, is not done anymore. That's the problem. Since the end of the Cold War, you're not dealing with countries that are fighting each other. You're dealing with factions who couldn't give a damn about the United Nations, and you have to kill them when they're raping and murdering their way through a village somewhere in the Balkans.
Lou, Andy's on the line with us. He thinks the army is held back by the government. Andy, good day. How are you? Welcome to The Last Angry Man.
Yes. What I was saying is that the Canadian army, although small in number, they have adequate equipment. They might not have the greatest equipment in the world. They have pretty good training. But there's one problem. When you give the military to do something, but then you tied one arm behind their back, by which they have to be gentlemen officers, they have to be the troops that do the actual work in the field, they have to ask them, sir, are you a terrorist? Would you mind identifying? I mean, you cannot fight terrorism with the mandate that they are getting.
So political correctness is holding back the effectiveness of what we have left in our military.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You might as well not send anybody.
Well, Lou, what's more important, the mandate or the manpower?
Well, I think the caller raises a good point, but he's referring to, fortunately, an organization that we're weaning ourselves from, in spite of the fact that Canadians, half of them, genuflect in the direction of Manhattan every day to worship the United Nations, which does a lot of good work. I mean, UNICEF, UNHCR, World Health, all of that. But as far as peace and security goes, it's proven itself to be totally and absolutely incompetent because of the Security Council time warp, you know, back in 1945, the structure of it. But now that we're operating with NATO, for example, where we had the incident today in Kandahar, the rules of engagement are much, much more robust. You don't have to ask anybody if they're a good guy or a bad guy. You judge by their actions.
Andy, the interview that General McKenzie was referring to, in that interview, he said that he made a parallel to 1993-94 when Canada had missions all over the world, in Sinai, in Cyprus, in Germany. I believe we have 4,000 men in our NATO contingent. Andy, do you think that Canadians, who are a G7 nation, we benefit a lot from the cheap resource and cheap labor of the world, don't you think that we owe at least to the people of those countries to be involved in a little bit of hope, to be involved in those engagements for democratic development?
Yes, we do owe them a lot in that case. But at the same time, if you want to achieve something, you cannot do it with the method that's being used. I'm going to give you a very simple answer that will prove my point. You have Saddam Hussein and a few people before court. Even if they're found guilty, to me, they're not guilty at all. You know why? Because in order to solve the problem, you have to go right to the court. You have to put 150,000 people before court and indict them, because just by taking a few off, a few heads, you've not achieved anything. So the same thing in Afghanistan. If you don't go with a hard hand, by the way, the people where we in Afghanistan, where we have the troops, they don't believe, they don't have the same mentality, the same idealism that we have. And that means is that if they don't respect you, if they don't fear you, you are just going to be losing and you're wasting your time.
Andy, we'll be right back with more on what Canadian priorities should be with General McKenzie, Louise O'Sullivan, and our callers.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back with General Lou McKenzie. Lou, I know you're pressed for time. You're working with Tony Clement. One final question. Men, morale, materiel. How do we fix Canadian pride in what we're doing on the world stage?
You know, we have it's a tiny army, and I know people are tired of hearing me, you know, describe that.
Nobody's tired of hearing Lou McKenzie.
Well, the infantry, you know, is 2,000 smaller than the Toronto Police Force, so it gives you an idea of the size of the army. But they're good, and they're well-equipped. Problem is, we can't get them anywhere. I mean, we don't have the strategic airlift, we don't have the strategic sea lift, which has to be addressed. Both of those have to be addressed by the incoming government.
We had to lease planes from the Americans, I believe, if I remember correctly, to get soldiers to Montreal during the ice storm in 98.
Well, and during operations, when the Americans are pretty busy, normally in the same places where we're located, we have to go out and rent out-of-date Antonov aircraft. You know, I've had a couple of missions.
The Antonovs that just crashed in Russia.
The same aircraft, not a bad old aircraft, but they're not making a lot of spares for it anymore. So, I mean, that is no way to get our troops from point A here in Canada to the operational theater. We need our own, particularly sea lift, because sea lift is so much more efficient. It's not as fast as air, but way more efficient. And we need ships that will carry 1,000 troops and all their kit and helicopters. The last election, the Prime Minister, I thought quite unfairly, said, do you want aircraft carriers or health care? Well, it's not a zero-sum game. We're not talking about aircraft carriers. We're talking about troop carriers and ships that can get our kit there. So those are going to be very, very high priorities, because you can have the best military force in the world, but if you can't get it anywhere other than your own country where you don't have any conventional threat, then, you know, what good is it?
What's the timeline for catching up, Lou?
If somebody really took it seriously, 5 years, but probably more like 10, because there's been a tremendous attrition of the talent base in the military. That doesn't mean that the people serving aren't talented, but it does mean that a lot of very talented people have left because they've seen the writing on the wall as the numbers got smaller and smaller. I left in 93, just a couple of years early, and, you know, there was about 86,000 at that time. Today we have less than 55,000 effectives.
So that's got to be turned around with a positive attitude and a push where it's a priority to catch up.
You're right, and it's not going to be easy, because recruiting, everyone's talking about increasing the numbers, and when they throw out numbers, and you know, the Tories have said 13,000 more regulars, the Liberals have said 5,000 more, I certainly endorse those numbers, particularly the 13,000, but they're having a hard time even replacing the normal annual attrition for the military. So you have to pay attention to your military before it becomes an attractive career option, because normally we want people to stay between 20 and 35 years. People really have to have confidence that the force isn't going to get smaller and less well-equipped. They've got to see that the corner's been turned. We're starting to turn that corner, but we are not anywhere near out of the crisis yet.
Got to start sending the right message, right?
Absolutely, and that's leadership, and quite frankly, you know, on most political issues, I agree with Ralph Klein. Ralph always got a chuckle from me when he said Canadian politicians should find the parade and get in front of it. In other words, follow the public will.
Not be like the French Revolutionary leader who had a cocktail party and heard the mob outside and said, well, sorry, got to leave you guys because I got to see which way the mob is heading so I can lead them. General Lou McKenzie, thanks very much and good luck.
Cheers.
We'll be right back with Tory candidate Louise O'Sullivan.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. We just finished with General Lou McKenzie, and we want to hear from you. Are you tired of being second-rate on the world stage? Don't you think that Canada's got a responsibility not just to take in immigrants, not just to take in people running as refugees, but to actually hold out a hand and help these countries, help the people who are oppressed in these countries from whom we get cheap resources and cheap labor? Shouldn't we have bear our fair share of the burden? Now let's bring the issues to street level. In the studio with us is Louise O'Sullivan. Now, Louise, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rick.
How are you?
Good afternoon, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. Louise O'Sullivan, to those of you who don't know her, and there can't be many, has been involved in politics on every level. She was recently a member of the executive committee with a variety of portfolios, including social development. She went from the last campaign, where she started her own party, Équipe Ville-Marie, where everybody I met downtown told me they voted for her, but unfortunately didn't get elected, right into this campaign. Mm-hmm. I don't know, where do you get the energy for this?
I love what I do. It's not a job, it's a vocation. I choose to do it.
She was profiled this week. Many of you may not have seen it. Many of you did. Title of the profile in the National Post was The Conservative Gal Next Door, but I can tell you this candidate is a lot more than Conservative Gal Next Door. Everybody knows her. She's on the ground. She's working the problems of everyday life and of everyday Montrealers. Louise, what are you finding door-to-door in a riding where the biggest knock on Lucien Robert has been, we don't see her?
You hit the nail on the head, Beryl. I can tell you, I've lived downtown since 1969, and I'm appalled by the fact that the federal representative for the downtown riding is not visible, has not been visible since 1995. I work very closely with her. I think you know why. Most people know I was a Liberal up until the spring. I haven't hidden it. I'm now blue. I was red in the face. I became blue in the face, and I'm very proud to be part of Stephen Harper's team. I think that I've got a good crack at winning because I've been hitting the pavement since the beginning of December. They approached me, and I was still hitting the ground, as you all know, municipally. And I'll still keep my finger in the pie municipally because I
love
the city.
And you're very in touch with those social issues that hit home.
Absolutely.
The bread and butter stuff.
Absolutely. You know, when I was at City Hall, I was responsible for the downtown core, the business core, and I also had four portfolios. One of which was very close to my heart, which was the social file, as you all know. And I remember the Old Brewery Mission got $1.1 million from the federal government, a very special program called IPAC.
Right.
It's an itinerant program.
Right.
And there was a shortfall of $300,000 because at the time they were building the Palais de Congrès. Everything was going up. Manpower was high, materials were high, and the board came to me. The Old Brewery Mission came to me at the time. There was a reverend who was running it. But Maury Cohen is a very good friend of mine. And Maury, as I think you know, lives in Westmount. He said, Louise, you know, you've got to do something for the Old Brewery Mission. We're dipping into our capital. We really need it. We will have to give back the $1.1 million. So what I did was I called Lucien's office, and I said, I need your help. And she asked me to send the file. I sent the file. Nothing happened. I approached Paul Martin. Nothing happened. I approached Cochon. Nothing happened. At the end of the day, I put pressure on the mayor. He went to the provincial government, and it was André Boisclair, the PQ government, that helped us keep the $1.1 million because they needed a match of $400,000 to put sprinklers in a building that did not have sprinklers but housed 300 men. Can you believe it? That match would have got the place.
Well, Louise, you have a reputation in Montreal as a social activist, and we hear a lot of this problem of absentee MPs, absentee mm-hmm. representatives. Mm-hmm. I got a slew of calls at the office this week when these attack ads came out saying, hey, I remember the Army coming in during the ice storm and helping.
Of course.
Do you, as a Montrealer, and you're mm-hmm. known as a Montrealer, not mm-hmm. just a downtowner, mm-hmm. you get a lot of calls from people who say, hey, my MP is unreachable. My MNA is unreachable. My city councilor is unreachable.
Beryl, I have a friend who is a principal, one of the main real estate companies, a real heavy hitter, worked with Charles Marlthman. And he called me and says, Louise, I'm tearing up my Liberal card. This is going back about 4 or 5 years ago. So what do you mean? I was chair of membership for Lucienne on her board. And he said, well, I call my MP, Lucienne Robillard. She hasn't returned my call. And he said, I didn't call once, I called three times. So I called Lucienne Robillard and I said, you know, could you do me a favor? Could you call my friend and find out what's going on? She called me back and she said, we've gone back 6 months, your friend never called. That is not responsible. Don't waste your breath on me. To invest in the people that support
us. There's a direction that you got to get pointed in public life, and that's a direction to public service.
Absolutely. And, you know, just because you're a minister, I was a member of the executive committee. I had the chauffeur. I had the titles. I had all the perks. We're there first by being elected by the grassroots.
Right.
It's not top down, as you just said before. It's top up when you get elected.
Other than that issue of the absence of the local member, and that's mm-hmm. like Verdun, Westmount. Mm-hmm. You know, you can hear this across the mm-hmm. island. What are the other issues that are people are talking to you about on door to door?
There's a. I just came from a church. In NDG, as you all know, I'm representing three pockets. I'm the downtown core, Westmount, but there's also a pocket in NDG. I was at St. Augustine's this morning, at daycare.
My old parish. I was an altar
daycare.
Boy there.
Well, visit communion about an hour ago. All to say that these people are really concerned about, they feel that $1,200 may not be enough, but it is a step in the right direction. That's what they're telling me. They said, thank God you're there. We've been liberals all our lives, but we like what we hear from Stephen Harper.
Montreal, we'll get right back to this discussion. We want to hear from you. Do your representatives, do your MPs represent you? Can you reach them? Do they advocate for what you need? Right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Good day, Montreal. We're here with Tory candidate Louise O'Sullivan and Westmount Ville-Marie. We're talking about not only accountability, but accessibility to MPs. And Louise, I wanted to ask you something. We just finished with General McKenzie about one of these attack ads on the military. The other attack ads have accused Stephen Harper of doing everything except the Lizzie Borden killings. And I want to know what's been the reaction on the street. For example, they've accused him of not being compassionate, that he has a financial deficit. Of course, they don't talk about the democratic deficit we've just lived through. How are people on the street reacting to these attack ads?
I can tell you that the attacks are more on the liberals than the conservatives.
Heavy blowback.
Shame, 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 Gummery. Okay, Gummery is still on the table. They haven't forgotten. They're angry liberals, and they're moving to our side.
Have they remembered the overall Gomery, the $167 million to CSL, the Earnscliffe contracts, the flags of convenience?
It's still on the table. It's very fresh, and they are not forgetting.
So there's no drift off. There's no
none whatsoever. None whatsoever. And they know that, you know, having been a liberal all my life, they asked me, and then basically that was the crux.
You're not alone. That's what they're asking me. I was a lifetime liberal, and I was
right.
Like you. I was on an association, NDG Liberal Association, back to university. It's time. It stops.
Well, Lucienne had, I was interviewed in the local magazine 2 weeks ago, and if you read Echo, you'll see that she's surprised that I switched sides, but she realizes that there were mistakes that were made, and that I was a prominent liberal. She couldn't understand it, but she'll face me tomorrow, because I'm debating her tomorrow night at Victoria Hall.
One of the issues, of course, is the social policies of the Tory platform, the so-called, quote, hidden agenda. And we have Peter on the line who wants to talk to you about the question of gay rights, but another one of the attack ads talked about this the fact that we will not recognize Canada when Stephen Harper is through with it. Well, I'm not sure I recognize Canada today on the social agenda. We've had a government that just before the election passed a law that that allowed our internet telephony records and email records to be given over to state security apparatus without probable cause, just on simple request. We've got a government that passed a law that overturned the presumption of innocence in certain criminal cases. We've got a Liberal government that passed a law that allowed police to stop you without probable cause and search your car for drugs. So I'm not sure what hidden agenda the Liberals are worried about on Stephen Harper's side when I don't recognize the Canada that Liberals have put in. So let's go to Peter and ask him about gay rights. Peter, how are you? Welcome to The Last Angry Man.
Yes, hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. Mr. O'Sullivan, I have just three quick questions. I don't require a big answer, but at one point in time, you were publicly against gay rights, gay marriage, rather, I should say. Not gay rights, but gay marriage. Yet, I know you attended the first gay marriage after the law was successfully passed here in Quebec. You were the guest of honor or one of the prime guests at that marriage. And I was wondering what your position is today on the gay rights issue. The other two questions I have, and it's just a yes or no answer, are you a member of the Agnus Dei organization or of a Palestinian group? I don't remember the name of it, but these are things that I'm hearing out on the street. And I'd just like you to either confirm or deny if you are or not.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. To begin with, the first gay marriage protocol. I was responsible for the social file, and I was not there as a private individual. I was there to represent the City of Montreal, sir.
Okay.
Opus Dei, I'm friends with Jewish people, Catholic people. My mother was Jewish, became Catholic to marry my father. I'm a Catholic. I practice my religion. I have very close friends in Opus Dei, and I was invited to, I attend different services at different times, and I'm very, very open. I'm not prejudiced, sir.
Hey, Pete, don't sweat it. I mean, I don't go to any services, and I was born Jewish, and I got an invitation to Opus Dei. Rick and I were just talking about that. I don't even know how that happened.
And I do. So it's great. Thank you very much, Mrs. Sullivan.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
How much of this? We've been joined in studio, by the way, Montreal, by Anthony Philbin of Anthony Philbin Communications, one of Montreal's premier public relations and communications guys. Tony, how are you?
Fine, Beryl. Thanks very much.
Louise, how much of this social agenda is a real issue on the streets? Aren't people getting it that what we've seen with the Liberals in legislation, in reality, is a lot more frightening than whatever they've been scared of as far as his hidden agenda?
You know, it's a scare tactic. People use the word scare, hidden agenda. What is the hidden agenda? There is no hidden agenda. Ask the question, we'll answer it.
Where was the social agenda when Martin was taking away all the EI money to pay off the deficit as well? That's what I'd like to hear.
When they denounced Stephen as lacking compassion, indeed, why don't they remember that he ripped out the money from healthcare and the UI surpluses? Montreal, we'll be right back, and we want to hear from you. Really, who's the threat to the Canadian social fabric?
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
Montreal, we're back with Rick McConomy, Tory candidate in Westmount, Ville-Marie, Louise O'Sullivan. We've been joined by Judge Andre Ruffo, and we'll get to the question of the youth protection system in a few moments. Louise, we, meaning the Institute, exist because people are frustrated. They can't get their elected representatives to act for them. They can't even access them. I can assure Montrealers you won't have that problem with Louise O'Sullivan. But, Louise, what do you tell voters who say, yeah, but if we vote Tory, we're really helping the Bloc and it hurts Canada?
We're the only alternative, Beryl. We've got to stand up for Canada. There's real leadership with Stephen Harper. I'm there. I will be the voice for downtown. Downtown is the economic motor of Quebec. And if Quebec has to be included in any decisions at the table at caucus, I will be there. It looks as if we're going to have
a 23% of Quebec voters decided it could translate into 3, 4, 5 Tory seats.
And, you know, it's time that the people in downtown elect someone who will stand up and listen for them. Lucinda has not been there for the last 12 years. There's accountability, presence, health issues. We have two major hospitals downtown. There's got to be somebody here speaking up. $1.1 billion has been put on the table for each hospital. $1.1 billion for the English, $1.1 billion for the French, for brick and mortar. What about the doctors? What about the nurses? What about the operating costs? Somebody's got to be there to scratch Ottawa to let them know that we are important. We are the poor cousin to Toronto. We've got to take our place, and Quebecers have to be understood in Ottawa, and I will be the voice.
And they don't have to be scared anymore.
Scared is not, doesn't even exist in my vocabulary. Thank you very much, Beryl and Rick. But
we know just, that.
You know,
but they don't have to be scared of that liberal mindset. We can vote free
scary,
and we can vote true.
Beryl, the scary ones are the liberals. That's why we're not there. That's why I'm not there. They scared me. I'm not with them anymore.
They scared the country.
They scared the country, and they'll continue scaring the country. The only alternative is Stephen Harper and the people he's put. There's new blood. I'm new. I'm not new in politics. You know that.
No, you're not. No, no.
And I will fight for Montreal. I'll fight for Quebec to take our rightful place at the table in Ottawa. So
you sound
vote
like the,
conservative.
You sound like the kind of champion this city needs. Louise, best of luck.
Thank you very much.
I'll send you back out on the street. I know that you got to use a car to go door to door in Upper Westmount, but the rest of it, I know you're pounding the pavement. I've seen you. We've been together back and forth. Best of luck to you and your campaign.
You.
Louise,
thank
best
you.
Of luck for me. In Montreal, let's send a real public advocate to Ottawa from Westland Ville-Marie. Louise, best of luck to you.
Thank you very much, guys.
We'll be right back with Judge Andrew Ruffo.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Hello, Montreal. We have in studio Rick Pompanami, and we've just been joined by Judge Andrew Ruffo. We've just finished our first hour where we talked about the need for accessibility of public representatives, elected officials. But we also need advocates within the system. And we have one of the greatest with us today. Now, Judge Ruffo has been controversial, and we're going to be talking in this hour about perhaps the two most vulnerable segments of our society, young people at peril, at risk, and seniors. Judge Ruffo, as you may have read, has been suspended, or the recommendation for suspension, by a five-judge panel of the Court of Appeal. Andre's shaking her head at me. She's going to correct me.
Beryl, let Andre tell us what her situation is juridically at the moment.
Andre, what happened with that?
The Court of Appeal asked for my destitution.
And is there an appeal process to that?
Yes, we're going to Supreme Court. Yes,
Supreme Court.
Yes.
So that's under wraps at the
yes,
moment.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we will be careful not to ask you specific questions.
We will ask no specific questions on
thank
it.
But
you.
Your life has been devoted to children. Your
yes.
life has been devoted to speaking out for children at great risk,
yes.
as we can see. And your life has been trying to reach in and make people understand what has to be done with this province as far as youth is concerned.
And it's so simple. If I feel that I have the right to be happy and to accomplish my dreams, I think that I should at least help the others to obtain the same thing. And this is not only for our children. I've chosen to speak and to work with children, but it's also for children all over the world. Why is it that our children can eat, they can be respected, they can have this and that, and in other countries they can't even survive. And after 6 months, they're just dead. So for me, that is the first thing about justice. Let everybody live, and let us try to give everybody what it's needed for them to accomplish their destiny.
Now, you've been traveling around the world on this particular mission. Would you tell us something about some of the places you've visited and some of the activities that have taken place there?
Well, I've seen in Sri Lanka children on the floor, very sick children. They were like animals. I've seen children, little girls of 8, 9 years old in the Philippines with very older men, and they were abused, and it seems to be normal. Nobody is shocked. I've seen children here on the street, drugs, you know, full of disease, and nobody's taking care. And what is the saddest part is I've seen so many of our teenagers so depressed without any services, considered as delinquents and sent in reception center to be reeducated. Those are sufferings that are unbearable, and we are not to decide which child suffers the most. we should not allow those children to suffer wherever they're born. It's not important wherever they're born.
Andre Rick, Evelyn wants to talk to Judge Rufo. Evelyn, you're on the line with Judge Rufo.
Oh, I do. I hope I won't sound too gushy.
Gush away.
Oh, listen, Judge Rufo, we need more people in the world like you. We need more people to look out for kids and for innocent people who can't fight for themselves. And why in the world people would take up an issue with you when you were doing such outstanding work, the work that all of us should be doing, I'm just beside myself. That's all I can say is I wish you a wonderful career. I wish you all the best. And I just wish that somebody would see that you're just people like you save children.
Thank you. You're very, very kind.
I'm sorry if I did gush too much.
You did. Thank you, Evelyn.
Thank you very much.
You know, we received a lot of letters, Andre, when we announced that you would be on, and I just want to read two sentences from one. There have been many miracles performed by Andre Rufo, where her insistence on upholding children's rights have changed and influenced the lives of the young people who appeared before her. Unfortunately, the people who benefit from these miracles don't have the power of access and advocacy. Is that our problem in the youth protection system?
It's very touching what you've just read. I think that it's wider than that. I think that we live under the law of fear and silence. You know, when I look at all those people who will be reacting to what has happened to me, the message to other judges is you better be quiet, otherwise you'll be in trouble. So what does it say to the others? You know, it's very, very wrong what's happening.
Do you think it's just the judicial, or is it in our society, we have the judiciary, we have bureaucracies, we have government departments. Is there a general discouragement by bureaucrats? We live in Quebec, for example, with a population of one quarter the size of California's, with four times the number of bureaucrats. Are we being discouraged from even accessing departments? Forget about the judiciary, but just accessing bureaucrats.
Absolutely.
And when we do, we're smeared with some kind
Absolutely, totally. You have to hear the social workers who have retired saying what's happening at the Youth Protection Director. You have to listen to judges who have retired, who now are writing books to say what happened when they were judged. Why can't they speak as they are in office? Why can't they disclose the abuse? Why can't they just inform people that are entitled to have their rights respected? It's not a favor we're doing to those children. They have the right to live, the right to be educated. People live under fear because I think that because we asked them, demanded for them to obey, we just took away from them their capacity of judging, of criticizing. But that is very positive. If we want our children to grow and be decent citizens, we have to provide with the proper services when they're suffering. That's obvious for me.
Do we need a major inquiry into this? I know that
go
around the world and you've been having public hearings in countries concerning their treatment of their children. Isn't it time that we did that here?
It's more than time. I remember a few years ago I spoke to a minister who was responsible for children, and I was telling, as I'm saying today, it is a disaster. It is a disaster. I've never seen so many children suffering. And he asked me, what should I do? And I said, well, I'm sorry about that. You are the minister. He said, I can do. I'm stuck with Les Syndicats. He was telling me that there was at least 20 unions just in Montreal.
We'll be right back talking about more of this disaster situation right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're here with Judge Andre Rufo and Rick McConomy. We want to hear from you if you've had trouble with the youth protection system or know anybody who has had. But I want to ask a question of Judge Rufo first. Is there something, Judge Rufo, that we can learn from the Americans? Louis Brandeis, the great Supreme Court Justice, once wrote, "Judicial silence and inaction in the face of a system that does not work is nothing less than complicity in perpetuating the injustice." In other words, pulling the line is like doing the crime. Why can't we have that tradition here in Canada?
Because people are afraid. We just mentioned it. I think that all the time I was on the bench, almost 20 years, when I discussed with my colleagues, they all agree with what I was saying. The situation, they know the situation, but they're afraid to speak. I'll give you an example. When I was in St. Jerome, two other judges said, we're prejudiced against the youth protection director. We can't sit anymore. Fine. So the next day I would have thought that they would say, we're sorry, we can't sit anymore. No. During the night, the judge on authority said, oh, you can't do that. You have to continue sitting. So we had two judges who declared that they were prejudiced to continue sitting because the Chief Justice, one of the judge in authority, told them to do so.
So in other words, it's okay for judges to make public declarations, Gomery to give public interviews, but it's not okay for Andre Rufo to send two kids in a car to the minister's office because there's no room for them in a foster home.
I think as long as you tell the truth, as long as you do it for the right reason, I think you have to do it. Otherwise, you're just complicit. There's nothing, nobody will ever convince me that the silence that we've been having for so many years was useful for children.
Andre, we have Arthur on the line with a case study of the dysfunctionality of the system. Arthur, welcome.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Madame Rufo, just first of all, just want to commend you again on your courage and conviction, and thank you both for the opportunity to share a bit of what I'm a direct witness to. I've been involved in a case through a close friend for the last 18 months, and I'm shocked and horrified by what I'm witnessing. In the last month, since September, the latest issue has been the attempt to be able to contact the children that are in the DPG's hands right now. They are refused all access to their mothers, and even through third parties, and with threat of a total cutoff of contact if they do not abide by these ordinances, which we have yet to see, of course. But this is just one of many, many issues that I've discovered in examining closely this file that started in 2001. I just cannot believe what I'm witnessing. There's absolutely no charter rights, no habeas corpus, no burden of proof required.
Is there an ombudsman in the system? And this is a question for Andre.
No, there's none. And there should be. No, there's none.
There is a commission that apparently has some powers to investigate, but our understanding.
Judge Rufo is shaking her head. No,
they don't have powers to let. They don't have powers to order, and they don't have powers to change.
No. I think
But Rick, where does a citizen go if they've got a problem?
Other than
calling us.
The citizen comes here. It's about time in this province that we start to publicly condemn the things that do not work. That's an important thing for us all to do.
But every time a citizen calls anybody in the government, they're accused of of everything from lobbying to God knows what.
And they're victims of retaliation too often.
Well,
retaliation is something very important in the system.
Yeah. Well, this is what we've witnessed as well. Every attempt to demand our constitutional rights has just led to reprisals.
We'll be back right after this with Judge Andre Rufo, with Arthur, and with Tony Koshan, the executive director of Don Loren. We'll look at the problem of kids on the other side.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back with Judge Andre Rufo talking about the dysfunctionality of the youth protection system, Rick McConomy. And just before the break, we were talking about how people, when they want to get into the system, ordinary citizens, when we pick up the phone, not only get stonewalled, but sometimes retaliated against. And before we pick up on that theme, we have Carol on the line for Judge Rufo. Carol, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, and I'm so happy to hear you on there today, Judge Rufo.
Thank you.
And did I hear you say that your case was overturned? Or is it still pending?
It was overturned, but
no.
We're going to Supreme Court.
Yeah, great.
Yes.
Because I tried to bring this your situation up on another, with a lawyer on another show at one point, and there was a lot of feedback. But that's beside the point. I have had terrible treatments with the youth protection. I have a daughter who has six kids, three different husbands. Situation has been horrible. I have not even seen my grandchildren. her ex-husband has no, we've been through everything, and youth protection and changing workers and going to the home, and they have done absolutely nothing.
Well, Carol, I'd like you to give the details of your situation to our associate Val Prudnikoff, who's in the producer's booth, so we're going to turn you over to him. And Arthur, you're on the line with Judge Rufo.
Yes.
And we are going to have Tony Koshand of Don LaRue joining us in a moment. Arthur?
Yes.
Judge Rufo's listening, and so are we.
No, just, again, more of the same there. I guess what we're wondering now is whether, you know, we should be looking for a human rights lawyer or if there's any other recourse within the system. We've tried to exploit and to exhaust every means, and we've written to the regional director of the DPG, but it's their policing themselves, and there's supposed to be a commission involved as well, although we've heard nothing from them, and we provided them with very detailed accounting of all the abuses, and they've been going on since 2001. And like I say, in the latest one was where in the last audience the mother was accused of having heard of her children and having reached her children through a third party by email.
Arthur, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but at this point, Andre, Rick, is there any place where citizens like this who have people at peril, who have families at peril, can they call the Commission des Droits de l'Homme? Is there anywhere to turn?
No, there's nowhere that you can go in this province where you can realistically expect to get some kind of a proper service. The problem in this whole thing is the people that you're dealing with on the front line are exercising a discretion. When you fly in their face, they retaliate. You tell them they're doing the wrong thing, your visitation disappears. You tell them that they're not doing their job and they're not concerned with the children. I can remember having Françoise Dalto, a very famous psychiatrist here in the city, who said, if the child is the child of a murderer, you bring the child to jail and you let the child know the truth and the reality. And the problem is this whole system is based not on truth. It's based on manipulation of people's lives, and unfortunately, we've lost control.
And kind of afraid of truth and reality. We'll be right back to continue this with Tony Koshand of Don LaRue.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to the last angry man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Hello, Montreal. We're talking about advocacy for perhaps the most vulnerable members of our community. We have Judge Andre Rufo in studio with us with Rick McConomy. We're talking about the dysfunctionality of the youth protection system. We have with us now Tony Koshand, who's executive director of Don LaRue, who's done incredible work taking in some of the most heartbreaking stories from the streets. And we have Helen Waverock, who is the Directeur General of the Quebec Network Against Abuse of the Elderly. We're going from one end of the spectrum to the other, talking about how to advocate for the most vulnerable. If you've got problems, call in. We have the resources. And one of the things, Tony, hello, Helen, hello, that bothers us in this conversation,
hi,
that both Rick and Andre have brought up is, when people stand up, when people call, when people demand from a system, there is this, not only a stonewalling, but as both Andre and Rick have used these words, a retaliation mentality.
Perhaps, Beryl, I can, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to speak first, and I'd like to give maybe perhaps...
That's fine. This is Tony Koshand.
Yes. I'd like to give a slightly different perspective. I've been working with street kids now here in Montreal for 9 years. And during that time, I would have to honestly say that our relationship with youth protection has done nothing but improve, that I have found an openness on their part to understand the work that we do and the professionalism that we bring to our job. We have a protocol that was signed last year. I think it's unique in North America, signed with youth protection and with the police, that recognizes us as equal partners in trying to look at the safety and security needs of these kids. That was a huge step forward for youth protection and the police to be involved with us on that kind of a level. As well, youth protection...
But that's not the system that Andre's working in. That's parallel to what you're doing. That's not in the courts.
No, this is once the children have already been taken from their families or for their own safety and put into the youth protection system, a lot of the kids that run away on the streets have run away either from homes or have run away from different foster homes
or youth protection centers, and we work with youth protection to try and figure out how to get these kids to a safe place and to define what a safe place is.
Tony, Andre just has a comment about that.
Yes, I think it's wonderful that you have that protocol, but I have been working with POPs and the people from Dalai at the very beginning, and that was certainly not the case. You realize when we say it took 9 years to have a protocol with the DYP, that those children who were there before are much older than 18. They're 25, then 30. It was such a big problem to get the youth protection working with us, Dalai, because I was on the board. So all those children who had been taken care by the DYP, they were runaways, and we could not have the complicity and the help of the youth protection director. And it has been going on for 10 years, which is a little less the situation at this point, but it was quite difficult at the beginning, and I was on the board.
Well, I have to say that it hasn't been only a year that perhaps the protocol has been in place, but the relationship over the past, I would say at least half of my tenure at Dans la Rue, at least 5 years, I've had a positive relationship with youth protection, the ability to speak to the frontline social workers about the kids that are in their care. I'm not saying there aren't difficult situations, but one of the things that I would like to bring up is the fact that, in a sense, this show is pointing the finger at the things that aren't working right in the youth protection system, but where the problem lies, from my perspective, is parenting.
And where just on that issue, Tony, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just on that issue, we have CJ on the line, who thinks the government should issue a bill of responsibility to parents. CJ, what do you mean?
I mean by that, we in this country have become obsessed with our rights and our liberties. But just getting back to what a lady was saying.
Well, what do you mean by a bill of responsibility?
I mean that if you, let's say you're given the right to be a parent, and that's a right to be a parent, it should be a right that you know, you're a parent, but you don't have three or four different fathers for a mother to have, you know, six children.
But how much are you not? How much state control are you suggesting? I mean, this is a natural right.
No, not control, but at least tell them, listen, if you're going to have this, here's the problems you might face down the line. Be aware of the consequences of your actions. If your speed limit is 100 kilometers.
CJ, but you surely don't suggest something that happened this week in Britain where Blair suggested having a national parenting academy. If your kids get out of line more than a few times, the parents have to go to a parenting academy or get fined. I mean, how much autocratic control and state rape do we need in our lives?
Unfortunately, where you have people who abuse rights and liberties and who don't seem to understand the concept of responsibilities and duties, you're going to have problems.
CJ, thank you. Andre's going to comment on that.
I think that it's a way of seeing the situation, but there's another one, and I think it's the only positive way, is who are those parents? Who were their parents? Where were they brought up? What kind of education did they have? Who told them or showed them how to be loving and caring? Who had compassion for them? Were they abused themselves? And I think we have to start there. Okay, at a point in time we say, no, we can't continue abusing children or neglecting them. But in order to find a solution on long-term basis, we have to go back to the parents. Punishing is no use. No use at all. Those parents very often are poor, are afraid. They were abused themselves. They have no people to speak to. They're isolated. And I think that's where we have to be working, supporting the parents, not punishing them.
They have to learn adequate parenting. They have to be helped with that. We have to start getting into the neighborhoods and helping people.
Exactly. Community.
Getting there face-to-face with the people, because if you send these children back to the same context that caused their problem, you may respect the access rights of the parent, but you're not improving the child's life.
So more social advocacy, more intervention in the communities, less law and legislation. We'll be back with Helen Waverock and talk to her about her problems with seniors right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man.
Keep Tony with us and try a Daryl.
Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
My Montreal, we've been talking about advocacy and advocating for the most vulnerable in our society, from young people in troubled families to young people on the streets who go to Don La Rue. Now I want to talk to Helen Waverock. Helen, good afternoon. How are you? Thanks for coming on.
Good afternoon.
Helen is the Director General of the Quebec Network Against Abuse of Seniors. Helen, define abuse in your terms.
Define abuse.
It's not just physical, is it?
No, it's not just physical. It's by negligence, especially when you're dealing with senior citizens. But I'd like to just get back after having listened to your recent exchanges. You know, if we don't deal with the issues of abuse of kids who later become adults, then I get them at the other spectrum, which is when they're seniors.
Right.
And I think that's important as a society, that we sort of realize that we have a serious, serious problem and that we all have to work together to try and find the solutions to that problem, because, as I said, I get it at the other end. And what do I get? I get seniors who are vulnerable, who are losing their autonomy, who have to rely on others. Others may be their own children, their grandchildren, maybe, you know, their next-door neighbors, but people who end up abusing them either financially, either by neglect, simply by cases of neglect. And I would tell you that we have cases that, you know, just blow the mind. There was the recent...
By the way, before the case, how do they reach that SO?
How do they reach the
SO?
How
can somebody call with a problem, and who do they call?
Well, first of all, we have an info line, which is an info abuse line, and so seniors...
Can you give out the number?
Yes, I can. It's, of course, the area code 514. It's 489-2287, 489-2287. And there are volunteers at the end of those lines who listen to the cases and who refer the seniors to the situation that best suits them. Now, this info line is manned by the CLSC René Cassin, where you have the experience and the expertise on elder abuse.
Who are the typical callers?
Typical
families
callers.
Families or the seniors themselves?
I would say 90% are the seniors themselves. Male, female, it's even, I would say. It's from every single region of Quebec. It's not a Montreal problem. It's not a Quebec problem. It's really a provincial problem. They're anywhere between, I would say, 70 to 90. And every single type of abuse, from physical, from financial, from negligence, verbal abuse, you name it, they are subjected to it.
Are you finding the problem of abandonment when seniors are hospitalized or in an institution and the family stops visiting, stops contacting?
Well, there's that also. That element also, but you know what's sad is that it's not because they're in the institutions that they're better protected. I mean, I wouldn't surprise you if you follow any of the current issues. There's often abuse within institutions.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you know, the problem is that we have a serious problem, and I think the public needs to be aware. I don't think they realize that this is a current daily occurrence, if
right.
You'll forget the bad choice of words here.
Andre just wants to get a word in on
why
that.
Is it that for adults we believe them when we say that they're abused in an institution? Why is it that when we say there's something wrong with the DYP or there's abuse in an institution, if we don't seem to be heard? Why is it? And we're asked to be silent. There's certainly a problem in a society.
Mm-hmm. Which is, by the way, I wanted to say to Judge Ruffier, I'm one of your fan members, and I wish I had a Judge Ruffio for elders, because I really do believe that the first thing we need to do is talk about it, because we sort of, you know, it's not a nice problem to talk about when we talk about abuse,
exactly.
So we sort of want to avoid it.
Yes.
But we need to talk about it because we need to realize that it is very, very present, unfortunately, in our society, and we need to find the tools necessary to diminish it. I don't think we'll ever, you know, get rid of it completely, but at least we can, you know, give ourselves the tools necessary to fight it and to make sure that elders, especially as in their last trail, that they can at least have some peace of mind and not feel that they have, that the, you know,
one of the things I need to point
that
out.
They have a feeling of helplessness.
That they have a feeling
they should be thanked for what they've
done. I have to cut in here because we're fighting the clock. I want to thank all our guests. Helen Waverock will be on tomorrow morning, by the way, on 9:40, discussing the specific problems of the seniors that died in some seniors' homes last week. I want to thank Judge Andre Ruffo, Tony Koshand, Executive Director of Don LaRue, Louise O'Sullivan, Tory candidate in Westmoreland, Marie, General Lou McKenzie, and Canada, remember, a nation of sheep will always elect a government of wolves. Thanks very much, Montreal. Keep fighting, keep writing. You can reach us at info@iapm.ca, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Next Sunday.
940 Montreal. The Last Angry Man can be heard Sundays from noon to 2. Beryl Wiseman is the president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal.